Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is The Savage Nation Part 2, meaning last night was the opening night. Welcome to the program across America. The phone number here is 1-855-400-SAVAGE, 1-855-400-7282. Topic number one is Revenge of the Soccer Moms. Women, why have you abandoned Obama? Now, this is an interesting question because it was in The Atlantic, which is a left-leaning publication, and they've noticed that women have abandoned Obama, and they're asking why. They're kind of perplexed. It says, in the beginning, Obama had the women sewn up, and then a couple of weeks ago, Obama's edge with women began to melt away. And they say more than any other group, women have accounted for Romney's surge in the polls, which has now given him a slim lead in the national popular vote, and in some calculations, a lead in the Electoral College. Why is this happening? Why is Obama bleeding women's votes? And I'm going to ask this question in the following way. What did Obama say or do that drove women away? If you're a woman and you want to call on that, or let's turn it around, what did Romney say or do that had you switch over to his side? Okay? The phone number is 1-855-400-SAVAGE, 1-855-400-7282, to get into the Savage Nation. And while you're calling on that important issue, Revenge of the Soccer Moms, if you want to call yourself a soccer mom, I find that derogatory. I think that there, not every woman is a soccer mom. Okay, you're a soccer mom, good for you. But women in general, why have they abandoned Obama? If you're a woman or if you're a husband of a woman who's turned around and gone the other way, let me know why. Let's see what's what else is on my website, michaelsavage.com. I mean, there's another huge story, which is the lies coming out of the Obama machine about Libya. Hillary downplays damning emails. They knew pretty quickly that it wasn't based upon the video, and yet they were putting out the lies. As far as I'm concerned, Susan Rice, amongst others, should be fired immediately. I would say if she had any shame, she would quit, but these people have no shame. It's shocking that they can get away with it. It's certainly one of the biggest scandals of our contemporary political lives here to see this. White House was informed of the terrorist claim 2 hours after the attack, and yet they went on shows, one show after another, putting out the lie that it was because of an anti Muhammad video, which they knew was a lie. It's a complete and total disaster. They're responsible. 4 Americans are dead. The embassy was burnt to the ground. Their Middle Eastern policy has gone up in smoke. And frankly, it leads to the next story, which I posted on michaelsavage.com from WorldNet Daily. Michael Savage said last night Romney missed an opportunity. I said if he was hungrier, he could have wrapped Obama over his knee and spanked him. And I mean it. I didn't do it for effect. I will tell you again that I was shocked at how weak Romney looked in that third debate. There was no excuse for it. And it was summarized best in my show last night, and I'd like to summarize the summary by quoting myself where I was quoting myself. WorldNet Daily wrote this today. Michael Savage returned to the airwaves last night with a new network and a new time, but his advice for Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney hasn't changed. If he was hungrier, he could have wrapped Obama over his knee and spanked him, Savage said of Romney's response to a question during Monday night's debate on the so-called Arab Spring Revolution. Savage said that instead of agreeing with Obama that it was right to support the ouster of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, an ally of America for 3 decades, Romney should have pointed to the Muslim Brotherhood's assumption of power in Egypt and the rise of Islamic radicalism across the Middle East and North Africa. Savage said Romney should have called it a stunning failure of Mr. Obama and his foreign policy team not to anticipate that the Arab Spring revolutions would lead to Islamic radicals to power, not only in Egypt, but Tunisia, Yemen, Libya, and Syria. They should have known this. And then I said Romney should have responded to moderator Bob Schieffer this way. Savage said Romney should have been Reagan-esque and said this, "Well, Bob, the Muslim Brotherhood is well known to want to introduce Sharia law. The Muslim Brotherhood hates America, hates freedom, hates women. It's only Mr. Obama's inexperience in world affairs that has led to the debacle not only in Egypt, Bob, but throughout the Arab Crescent, close quote. Savage said an answer like that would have brought the house down. That would have put Obama on the ropes. The entire debate would have gone the other way, he said. Instead, all we heard was, I agree with the president. Savage found Romney's agreement with Obama shocking. Even the moderator, he said, pressed for a policy difference with Obama. But there's Romney sitting in deference saying, Mr. President, sounding like Marilyn Monroe. Suddenly he's Marilyn Monroe in a suit. Well, anyway, you get the picture, right? In March, Savage urged Romney to heed the wisdom of the late Republican senator and presidential candidate Barry Goldwater, who, by the way, is my political hero, who famously said, extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me tell you something else. Moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue. The Savage Nation is open for business. Revenge of the soccer moms. Women, why have you abandoned Obama? What did he say or do? Or what did Romney say or do? Phone number is 1-855-400-7282. Let's go to the first caller. In my hometown of San Fran, I better say it right. I've called it so many things. San Francisco. KSFO, Jamie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. I'm a soccer mom. I'm the wife of a police officer, and I've been turned off by Obama for a really long time. But what really, really put the nail in the coffin was when he started pandering to women and talking about all these government programs that appeal to women as if we can't take care of ourselves in any respect. Also, too, the final straw really, really, really was when in the debates he seemed absolutely combative and mad and not in control of himself at all. And he was condescending and he was rude and belittling with the bayonet comment, and I couldn't even handle it.
You know, this is interesting. It's a very interesting answer you just gave, Jamie, and I'll tell you why. I have been in radio for 18 years, and I've heard, you know, virtually everything you could possibly hear from women, from men. And I don't know, I would have assumed that particularly the wife of a police officer would have liked the forceful man. But what you're saying is the opposite. It wasn't that he wasn't forceful, it was that he was condescending, I think is what you're saying. He didn't come across as strong. What did he come across as an adolescent, and that he looked weak to you because of that?
Right. I mean, you know, this might be too much information, but even when I get in the heat of the argument with my husband, he doesn't yell at me, because yelling and being condescending, it's showing you that you're not in control of a situation.
Well, I agree with you. Obama has had that look, that certain kind of looking down at people from day one. But do you think that explains why even the left-leaning Atlantic has written an article, Revenge of the Soccer Moms, and Why Have Women Abandoned Obama? Do you think this did it?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely.
Well, let me, Jamie, turn it around. Because this poll or this trend has been going on for a little while now of women jumping ship from Obama. Maybe it's that Romney looked like a more appealing candidate.
He did. He looked in control. He didn't look combative. And I think he was just letting Obama have a tantrum.
Wow, that's interesting. Obama having a tantrum. Well, you know, it sort of mirrors my attempt at humor last night, where I said that Obama started to sound like an adolescent who was lighting his own methane. And I know what you're saying. He did seem rather juvenile in times. Again, you know, it's interesting that Biden did the same thing with Ryan. Remember that constant sneer, the gaping, the big teeth? Where did they learn that technique? That's a horrible technique in a debate, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Biden probably learned that from sort of some grandchild he has. And we were eating dinner while that was on, and I left the room. I couldn't stomach it.
I turned it off, too. I turned off the Biden-Ryan debate after 10 minutes. I couldn't stand looking at Biden's face. I thought it was so incredibly, it was like off the wall. But then this third debate between the two of them, didn't you get a little uneasy with Romney's gentlemanliness, that it was a little overbearingly polite?
It was. There were times where I wanted him to be strong, but at the same time, whenever someone's being a baby like that, how do you react?
So you keep going back to the fact that Obama turned you off as a woman because he was petulant and adolescent.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, well, thanks for listening to me on KSFO. The phone number is 1-800. Again, I say 800. I'm so used to it. 1-855-400-SAVAGE. Great number, isn't it? Dedicated only to me. 855-400-7282. There are many other stories on michaelsavage.com. I want to read a few more. You know, let me explain how this works. I spend all day looking for stories. My producer does. The webmaster, Art Moore, does. And we post them on my website. Basically, it's my show prep. And so when I have pictures with a story, I can't believe how easy it is to go on my own website. And I just give you the headlines because you can go read the rest of it yourself. Video snags Dem boss plotting vote fraud. Forging ID, relying on party lawyers to fake votes. That's a Democrat, of course. That's the now here's a big, big story. Remember last night I was talking about the Spanish firm that counts votes for seven states? This came out this morning and it shocked me. Obama machine tampering with voting machines is my headline. In Greensboro, North Carolina, several voters say that ballots they cast for Romney came up Obama no matter how many times they pressed Romney. So this is worrisome. It looks like they're trying to steal the election. In the Middle East, it looks bad. Israel has halted war games with the United States military to deploy troops because the Palestinian rocket assault from Gaza has escalated. That did not make it to your local morning news, nor newspaper, because it would make Obama look like what he is, which is a man who has no control over the Middle East. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation. I am live. That's right. I am very live, and I hope you're live out there on the Savage Nation. It's show number two. Revenge of the Soccer Mom, says The Atlantic. They ask, why are women abandoning Obama? Why are women abandoning Obama is what we've been talking about. And I haven't gotten to the other topics, but there are quite a few. I mean, poor Donald Trump sure turned a corner here. He's offered $5 million to release his college records. And poor Donald's been attacked by everybody for that one. You know that Obama can't release his college records. And that's for a number of reasons. One is that they're liable to turn out that he got all A's. That's number one. So I don't know if that's the right road to go down. You know, the conspiracy theorists have it that Obama came in as a foreign exchange student, and that would undermine his allegation that he's a citizen. It's all irrelevant. What's relevant is that he's clearly so far to the left of center that he's out of the ken of a normal American politics. I don't think you understand that Obama really is our first, let me put it mildly, socialist president. Say, well, what does that really mean? It's very clear. It's state-run, top-down a government that runs every aspect of your life from cradle to the grave. Now, if you like a government controlling every aspect of your life, I don't. I'm an individualist, maybe from another time, but I certainly don't like anyone dictating to me what I do, let alone a governmental bureaucrat. And I don't know how you could not see it that way. I don't understand how any American wants a governmental official telling him how to make a pickle, grow corn, whether you can go into a tanning booth. Shall I go down the list? From the ridiculous to the sublime. From the ridiculous to the subprime, I almost said. Do we want a government detailing for us how we should handle everything from ridiculous to the subprime? I don't think so. I don't understand how you can't want America the way it should be, the way it was created to be, which is individual rights, individualism. This is what the election's about. Do you want unnamed bureaucrats of the type that can't manage the post office, can't manage the Middle East, can't manage virtually anything, managing your life? I don't. So who does? Well, let's start with the following groups. Those receiving benefits that they may or may not be entitled to. They love big government. Those who are not citizens who have been told that they should go to the head of the bus. Never mind not sit in the back of the bus, but they should go to the head of the bus. That an illegal alien should have more rights than a war veteran. Can you believe this? How can you want to live with that? That's Obama. It's really that clear a choice. And believe me, Romney is too moderate a Republican for my taste, but I'll take what I can get. So I've said that to you. I'm just laying on the line where I'm coming from because it's a talk show. I am not a journalist. I want to be very clear. I'm not a journalist. I'm an opinionated American. These are my opinions. This is where I'm coming from. If you want journalism, I would suggest you not go to any of the news networks because you're not getting journalism. What you're getting is the same thing you're getting from me, only it's masked. They're not telling you that they're far left wobblies, but that's who they are because they were, you know, in that school from the day they went to a journalism school. So if you want to talk about any of these topics, you know the phone number. Now, there are other topics that are sort of pregnant with opportunity in talk radio today, and everyone is talking about them, including the one that I wasn't intending to talk about, which is the Murdoch rape comment, because this is a good way to screw the Republicans and make it sound as though Republicans are in favor of such a horrible act. I will talk about that later, but before I do, I want to go on record where I've been for many years. To me, rape is the most violent act that can be committed, and any man who commits rape, who has been tried and convicted beyond a reasonable doubt, if I were the judge, I would have them castrated. That's my opinion on rape. Just to start with that, so you don't think I'm wobbly on it, I'm not. I can't imagine being a woman. I can't imagine what it must be like to be a woman being raped any more than I can imagine what it must be like to be a man in a jail cell being raped. It's perhaps the most violent act that you can commit against another person, which is why the animals do it to the other people, meaning they do it because they know they're violating your very soul. So I'm very clear on that. But having said that, the story itself is a little different. When Indiana Senate candidate Rob Murdoch became the Republican, when he said during a debate that even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, that is something that God intended to happen. Crazy statement. Crazy statement. I don't think he meant it that way, but he really stepped in it, by the way. Because if you say God intended it to happen, then it makes God an evil God. See, I mean, how do you look at that any other way? You mean God wanted the woman raped to create another child? That's insanity. Crazy. So, I can talk about this again a little later in great detail, not to shock you, but to discuss it with you. It's a disaster. And Romney should stay away from it, a mile away. He shouldn't draw close to Murdoch and show that he's in solidarity. And even though Murdoch deserves to win against his opponent, and he was misinterpreted, this could destroy Romney. He should stay away from him, in my opinion. And so, therefore, we can talk about that. And I have a lot of things to tell you that you may not know about how this situation of forcible rape was handled in other times in history and by other cultures. You'll be shocked to find out when I return.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Let me hear the rest of the bumper, though. I don't know this music. Maybe I'll change this music out. It's the Savage Nation, 1-855-400-SAVAGE, 1-855-400-7282, from anywhere in America. Over 100 affiliates in 5 days and growing. Big announcements virtually every week will be coming about new stations joining us on a regular basis here. If you're one of the early callers, it's going to be something you'll remember for a long time because it's the, I would say the renaissance of the Savage Nation is how I'd put it. And what we're talking about right now, if you just joined us on this program, is Revenge of the Soccer Moms, Women, Why Have You Abandoned Obama? And we had a caller who I think articulated very clearly why she didn't. She sort of was like swinging toward Obama and doesn't like him because he looked arrogant and petulant in the debate is what she said. Those are her words. I'm not a woman, so I don't know how women see things. Marilyn on KSFO in San Francisco. You're next up. What's on your mind, Marilyn? Go ahead, please.
Oh, hey, hi. Before I make my comment, just let me say welcome back to the Bay Area, and I'd just love to get the new book that's coming out. I absolutely adored Psychological Nudity.
Oh, well, you'll have to wait on Train Tracks because I'm not going to talk about it until after the election. It's going to be published the week of the election, which is kind of curious unto itself, but I'll talk about it the week after when nobody wants to hear the word Obama or Romney ever again.
Okay, well, then just let me say in regards, okay, I'll be honest, I'm one of the 47% that Romney talked about. I'm dependent on help from the government because I am disabled. I wish that I was able to work because, you know, the intrusive questions and things that SSI and DI ask you, I'd rather be done with this. But, you know, unfortunately, my circumstances.
Yes, but if you're genuinely ill, if you're genuinely incapable of taking care of yourself, that's what that program was created for. That's what it's for. It's supposed to help those who are unable to help themselves. The problem is people have abused the system, as you well know. Every time you go to a restaurant and you see someone with a blue handicap card getting out of a car as fit as an athlete, you understand how people abuse systems.
Well, exactly. And I just don't think that the direction that Obama wants to take our country in, it'll be unrecognizable if he gets in. And furthermore, another thing that really infuriates me as a woman with the Democratic Party is that they will fight for my rights as a woman to murder my child through abortion, but they won't fight for my rights to, as a homeowner, to put in the kind of toilet bowl or light bulb fixture that I choose.
That's quite a sweeping generalization, Marilyn. I appreciate you calling the program, and I wish you well with your many issues. 1-800, I keep saying 800, 1-855, I'll get it down, 1-855-400-SAVAGE. That's a toll-free number from anywhere in the United States of America. 855-400-7282. Let's go to the next caller, Augusta, Georgia. Rick, WGAC, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, it's an honor.
Thank you.
I want to talk to you.
Let me establish something, and I'm not trying to be arrogant myself. It's really not an honor for you to call me. I depend upon callers like you. So the person who has the honor is me, and I'm not saying it for effect. Anyone who knows my show knows how I see it. But thank you very much for the compliment. You don't need to compliment me. I'm glad you called.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm thankful that our local station, WGAC, elected to keep you on. We're just tickled pink here in the Augusta area.
Beautiful.
I want to talk to you about the news headline story today about the White House and the State Department receiving emails in real time from the Libyan ambassador and the Navy SEALs as the terror unfolded in Benghazi.
Right. Go ahead. Tell America what you as an American know to be true about this cover-up.
I'm appalled that King Hussein Obama could go to bed that night knowing about the attack and having the gall to go to Vegas the next day to campaign.
That's right. Well, you know what's important to Obama, and you know who's important to Obama. Here is an ambassador who's dead. The residences were torched. And at 6:07 p.m. on the day it happened, which was, by the way, September 11th, incidentally, you would think there would have been an alert at all American installations around the world on 9/11, wouldn't you, if you were an American who knew that radical Islam is at war with the rest of the world, whether it's Christian, Jewish, Hindu, or Buddhist. Everyone knows this. You would think Hillary Clinton's State Department would know that. And at 6:07 p.m. on 9/11/12, the email says Ansar al-Sharia claims responsibility. And yet, the spokesmouths from Hillary Clinton's department come out on TV and say it was because of a video. That's what you're saying. This is a bald-faced, naked disaster. Well, what else are they lying about? If they were willing to lie about the death of an ambassador and the burning of an embassy to the ground, what else are they willing to lie about? Isn't that what you're asking, Rick?
Yes, sir. That's exactly what I'm asking.
In other words, if they're willing to lie about that, what else are they lying about? I mean, that's really what you're worried about here.
Unreal.
Unreal. Unreal. And yet, you look at the news stories, it gets worse. The propaganda machine from the left, which is very powerful, incidentally. This is the most powerful propaganda machine in American history, in world history. Never in American, in world history, I'm sorry, has there ever been a propaganda machine as powerful as what we have today, whether it's the electronic media or the print media. And here we have Harvey Weinstein doing a Bin Laden film where they originally cast Romney as the villain. Now, we needn't say to you that Weinstein is a far-left radical from Hollywood who's made a fortune with violence, with filth of the lowest order. If I were to say to you the man most responsible in my lifetime for the sewer pipe of Hollywood, I would say it's Harvey Weinstein. And yet he's a huge supporter of Obama. Now you have to ask yourself, why? Why would Harvey Weinstein, a radical leftist, give tons of money to Obama? Why would he rather have Obama than Romney in the White House? It's simple. If your stock and trade is a sewer pipe pumping this vile imagery out to America and the world, who do you think you'd rather have in the White House? A clean, straight-up guy like Romney who may say, hey, guys, you know what? It's time to rein yourselves in. okay, because you're destroying the minds of the world and you're giving America a black eye. Stop it. I mean, there was self-censorship in Hollywood for decades. Decades. I remember when I was a kid, I grew up and I used to go to the movies with my father when he had a little time off, which was rare because he worked 7 days a week. We'd go to a movie and he'd say to me, you know, you'll notice something, Michael. I was a kid. He would say to me, you'll notice that in every movie you go to, this was in the 50s, he said the bad guys always get killed or go to jail in the end. They never, ever are seen rolling in money and partying with women and jewels and diamonds for their crimes. So I said, well, why is that, Dad? He said, because J. Edgar Hoover had a long talk with Hollywood, and they had to agree that every movie would show that crime does not pay. Well, I guess those days are antiquated to the Harvey Weinsteins of the world. I don't think Harvey Weinstein ever made a movie that showed that crime doesn't pay. I would say every one of Harvey Weinstein's movies is a movie that says crime does pay. And so, therefore, if you were Harvey Weinstein, who made his fortune putting out the salacious filth, of course you'd be a big supporter of Obama, and you'd fear the Christian straight. I mean, let's face it. You want to call it what it is? Romney looks like a church man. You know what that must do to Weinstein? It's like the fear of God. We don't want him in the White House. God only knows what he's liable to do to us in Hollywood. That's what he's thinking. That's the zeitgeist of the sewer pipe of Hollywood. At least it's one man's opinion. Now, I'm sure you don't agree with me. And I'm a huge movie fan. I got to tell you that right now. Do I like gratuitous violence? No. Do I put up with violence in movies? If it fits the plot, I enjoy it. Because I'm a student of cinema. I write novels. I like drama. And so there's a place for violence. There's a place for sexuality. But when you shift the set and frame and you make violence and overt, disgusting sexuality the whole story, that's not exactly called art. It's called pornography. And so if you were a pornographer, meaning an average Hollywood producer today, who are fundamentally putting out pornography of one kind or another, whether that pornography is pornographic violence, pornographic anti-Americanism, pornographic anti-establishmentarianism, you would want absolute and total freedom to commit with utter disregard to anyone's sensibilities, your machine, right? So let's move on. I mean, I'm giving an example of the propaganda machine that is operational. And here's Harvey Weinstein, of all people, was picked to do a Bin Laden film that's coming out 2 days before the election, in which not only do they glorify Obama's role in the Bin Laden raid, but they tried to make Romney a villain. And it was too much even for the, I think it was National Geographic wouldn't run it, I believe. I don't have the story right in front of me. The New York Times reveals today in a classic buried story that Harvey Weinstein's film about the killing of Osama bin Laden, set to air on the NGO channel 2 days before the election, originally included a scene showing Governor Mitt Romney appearing to oppose the raid, a complete fabrication of history. The film, SEAL Team 6, The Raid on Osama bin Laden, makes Obama into a star. Now, I'm all for movies and license of movies, of course. You know, it's called drama. I'd like to see Harvey Weinstein do a movie about the SEAL team that was killed, the 22 SEAL team members who were killed by the commander-in-chief or some idiot in the Defense Department who put 22 of them on a Vietnam-era helicopter, a Chinook helicopter, which was allegedly shot down with a single RPG. Why is that story not told over and over again until we find out who in the Defense Department was responsible for killing those SEALs? Because that, to me, is one of the greatest crimes of current military history. I've never seen anything like this cover-up. Well, I can go on and on about that, and I can't do it right now because most of you don't even know all those SEALs died in that raid. All we hear is that Obama's the greatest commander-in-chief since General MacArthur, maybe since someone before General MacArthur, which is rubbish, utter rubbish. I'm glad he got Osama bin Laden. I slept better at night after they killed Osama bin Laden. I still question why they disposed of his body at sea. It's not exactly at the level of Capricorn 1 for me yet, but if it was a later show at night, I might get into that, Capricorn 1, did we really land on the moon type of story. I mean, why did they dispose of the body? I don't quite understand that one, and I don't even want to talk about it. But if he's such a great commander-in-chief, why is he not taking responsibility for the death of those 22 Navy SEALs, five Army Rangers, and others, by the way, all killed because they were sent into a fire zone in a single helicopter. I never heard of this, by the way. You don't put 22 members of a SEAL team on one helicopter. They have far more advanced attack helicopters than a Chinook, which is a Vietnam-era helicopter. Why is that story not told? And certainly I wouldn't want Harvey Weinstein to produce that one. Certainly not. I'll be right back. When the lights, I love this song. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. You know this song, don't you? It's a little slower than my normal pace. But when I heard it, when I was off the air, just listen to a minute. It almost like brought tears to my eyes about San Francisco. I want to be back in my city. I love it. I'm back in my city on KSFO. Finally, back in my city on KSFO. On a station I helped build many years ago. It's great to be home. The circle. The circle. The circle. The wheel keeps turning. So the embassy burned down. Was the embassy attack a response to the imprisonment of the blind sheik? Well, I don't know. Somebody's asking that. Let's go to Sean on KLIF, a powerhouse blowtorch station out of Dallas, Texas. Sean, I'm so happy to have you on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Doc, thanks a lot. First time caller. I just had a question, and then I also have a prediction. My question was, you know, you haven't heard anything about the blind sheik. You heard a lot about him, and then the embassy disaster happened, and you don't hear anything about that anymore. And I'm wondering if the two of those are related at all, or whatever happened to him.
Well, it's interesting you should mention it, because on September 19th, 2012, the Fox News had a headline, DHS report warned last week of a call for burning the embassy down in Cairo, not Libya, okay? And it was related directly to the blind sheik. The blind sheep of America who are voting for Obama. But this is not a laughing matter. I mean, the burning of the embassy in Cairo, Egypt, they say was related to the imprisonment of the blind sheik. But listen to this one now. Embassy attack response to imprisonment of blind sheik? Days before the deadly attack on the U.S. consulate in Libya, a statement was related to the jailing of the sheik. So, you know, this is a story that keeps evolving, Sean. Of course these people are fanatic. Of course the Islamic militants are on the warpath. And of course they will do anything they can for vengeance. Is it related to Benghazi? I don't know the answer to that. But we shouldn't forget that the attack on the Libyan embassy occurred on 9/11. How in the world could Obama not understand that all embassies around the world should have been fortified prior to 9/11? How can he not understand that? And the answer is quite simple, because he actually thinks that he's changed the minds of the Islamic radicals. He thinks that by kowtowing to the Arab street, they like him more. He doesn't understand who he's dealing with. I don't believe he understands it. I believe that this is an example of an academic egghead disconnected from the realities of the world. Believe it or not, as tough as he is, as smart as he is, as ruthless as he is, and as politically savvy as he is, I actually believe they're naive when it comes to other actors on the world stage, Sean.
Well, I hope it's naivete and not evil genius. I try to keep it positive.
Now, I hear what you're saying. See, I'm not going to go there where he's playing for the other team. Although I'm a fan of the television show Homeland, you know that show? You know what I'm talking about. And many of you fear that, right? I mean, that's what you're alleging. Isn't that what you're saying, Sean?
Well, that's what I'm insinuating. But, again, you know, I'm not making that statement. But that does
Well, it's not late enough at night. If it was a show that began at midnight, I would accept that call and we'd talk about it for an hour. And we'd play some weird music, like, you know, some space music. But since the show originates 9 p.m. on the East Coast and 6 p.m. on the West Coast, we're not going to get into conspiracy talk tonight. But I don't think you're alone in that, incidentally. There's an awful lot of people in America, particularly ex-military, particularly police, who have suspicious minds, who fear that we could have people playing for the opposing team in very high places. Isn't that what you're saying? No. All right, let's let it go at that. Is it related to the blind sheep? We don't know. Do we have the sheeple sounds? I don't think you have that in the... I have it here on my instant replay. I don't know how to play that. If you want to call the Savage Nation, it's easy to do. 1-855-400-SAVAGE, 1-855-400-7282. If you're listening to the show and you've heard me for years, there's a difference in my voice, isn't there? You hear a lightness in my voice, don't you? You hear an almost joy in my voice, don't you? You hear a levity in my voice, don't you? And it's not because I'm floating in a helium balloon. It's because after 2 years of mental torment, I'm a free man, and I'm with the greatest radio company on the planet, Cumulus Media. And you know what? I haven't thanked the people. Maybe this is the right moment to do it. Because I have to thank the people who put me here. They parted the Red Sea for me, and we have to start at the top. And I hope I'm not out of line, but I will. Oh, I'm out of time. Okay, I'll be back.
Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation round two this evening. The phone number from anywhere in America is 1-855-400-SAVAGE. Of course, we're sold out as usual, so if you don't want to frustrate yourself, don't call 1-855-400-SAVAGE. Wait a while. Maybe a line will open up. And look, here it is. Romney's going up. But you know, there's an interesting element to this whole thing of the closeness of the race. If the liberal polls are saying it's that close, it means Romney's winning. And if they say Romney's ahead by 1 point, it's 10 points. But by my observation over the last elections, and I go back a little bit, it means he's way ahead. What astounds me is that why we even have a debate about whether Romney should win. See, Romney's a weak candidate. Let me be very clear. The Republicans have fielded such a, I have to use a word that doesn't offend too many people, it'll offend a certain number, such a neutered candidate in the form of Romney that he's only ahead by 5 or 10 points, from 1 to 10, let's put it that way. Obama is the most failed presidency since Jimmy Carter. He is the most divisive president, the most incompetent president, with the greatest number of scandals surrounding him in several decades that I can see. And so all the Republicans had to do was produce a moderate conservative. Now, Romney is not really a moderate conservative. He's a liberal conservative. Now, of course, he's being painted as Attila the Hun by the liberal media, as you well know, because you know where they're coming from. And we see the results are crazy. He should be way ahead. He should be way ahead. Let's hope that he really wins. I don't know if the polls are distorted. Here you got another scandal that just blew up in Obama's face, which is Benghazi, Libya. He knew, and he lied. Susan Rice knew and lied. Hillary Clinton knew and lied. They're a pack of liars. Yeah, well, what's new? All politicians lie. Oh, really? How about when they get caught lying? It's all the same? You mean when they get caught lying, suddenly it's okay? It's just shenanigans like Bill Clinton with Monica Lewinsky look the other way because they all do it? I don't buy it. There's a dead ambassador, three other Americans. The embassy's on burnt to the ground. The Middle East is on fire. The entire Arab Crescent blew up. The plan was a disaster. We had a great ally in Mubarak. They overthrew Mubarak. They let in the radical Islamists. Same thing as Jimmy Carter. Many of you don't know the history of Iran. You had a very strong leader of Iran who was somewhat fascistic, called the Shah of Iran. And the reason he was somewhat fascistic is because he was suppressing the very same elements that have now taken power in Iran and are taking power in Egypt and in Libya and across the Arab Crescent. He suppressed them in order to make certain that they didn't cut women's heads off for wanting to drive. And so what happened? You had a do-gooder, Jimmy Carter, came to power, and he worked against the Shah, deposed the Shah, undermined the Shah of Iran every way he could. And what happened? He brought back the radical Islamist cleric from London, who was in exile in London, Khomeini, and the rest is history. That spread the cancer. That was the metastasis of radical Islam. It was clearly a result of Jimmy Carter's warped view of the world, that you can make nice with people who want to cut your throats and convert you. You can't. You just can't. Now we have Jimmy Carter redo, combined with several other elements, because I'll tell you what the other elements are. Chicago, corruption. See, Jimmy Carter was not a corrupt man. Jimmy Carter was just sort of a naive leftist, and rather foolish at that. I'm shocked, by the way, when you look back on it, because Jimmy Carter, I actually admired him in that he was a submarine commander. I don't think he was a commander. He was a first officer. I greatly respected him as a military man. I had no idea that the man had such a warped worldview. But put that aside. It's ancient history. Now you have a similar mentality in Obama, only worse because it's combined with corruption and a level of deceit we've not seen in modern times. And I drive around. I'm shocked, by the way, people who still have Obama bumper stickers here. You know, this is another secondary side story. I almost got run over in a parking lot today by an Obama woman with a bumper sticker. I was, before the show, a couple of hours, I went to a mall, outdoor mall. I was walking to my car, and a woman comes careening around with her SUV, and I try to step to the right with my little dog, Teddy, and she almost aimed at me. She didn't know me. And like swerved and just sped around, and there it was, an Obama bumper sticker with a whole lecture on the back of her car. You know, the more they lecture you, the more arrogant they are. And she was driving it wasn't an SUV, it was a Prius, pardon me. So that's neither here nor there, it's a one-off, right? But it's not a one-off. I've noticed something odd happening here in liberal central here in the Bay Area. There's an awful lot of Romney Ryan lawn signs going up. And I'm scratching my head. What does this mean? I don't see any Obama lawn signs in Obama Central. Could it be that even liberals understand the man is a total danger to their survival? I don't know. I really don't know what's going on, but something odd is happening in the electorate. Something odd is happening. To see so many Romney Ryan lawn signs in the liberal central here is amazing to me. Maybe the people are no longer frightened of liberalism and liberals. They're terrified. They're afraid to say that they don't believe in Obama the God. But we all know this. So the polls now are this and that. Who knows what they are? I know the conservatives are generally not polled. I've never met a conservative who's ever been polled. I've never been polled. And I'm not 13 years old. I have never had a pollster call me and ask me what. Never. How is that possible? First of all, they wouldn't know how to reach me. I'm not around for a phone call. Who's around? If you collect the food stamp, you have nothing to do but answer a phone. You figure maybe the government's calling to ask you if you want any more services. How are you doing? Did you get the cheese? Yes. Did you get the stamps? Yeah. Did you get the Volt? Yeah, we got the Chevy Volt that's coming. Is there anything else we can serve you with, madam? We, the government, have many things we can give you. I mean, they're waiting for the phone to ring to give them more benefits. Michigan, I almost said Osage. I'm making a mistake. Obama 47, Romney 47. Unbelievable. Who can put up with this? I can't wait till it's over. Oh, my God. I'd give anything for this election to be over already. And then there's Gloria Bornred. How in the world does this woman get not... How is she not disbarred, Gloria Bornred? The most horrendous woman in American history is Gloria Bornred. I've never seen her take a decent case in her life. Everything that is warped, this woman represents. And what, she's going to release dirt on somebody now? Who would believe a word she says other than Obama? Allred says, Gloria Bornred says, I'm one of the best lawyers in America, according to Obama. Of course he would believe that. Oh, Obama's also a lawyer. Would you say Obama's one of the best lawyers in America? I doubt it. See, this is a problem. We have too many lawyers running the country. I mean, I'm not a fan of the legal profession. I can give you a little detail on it another time. It'll come out in my novel and in other places. We all know about legal horror stories. Once you have a lawyer for a president, you know, that's an advantage, by the way, that Romney has. He's not a lawyer. I think he ought to say that. I think in the next, there's no debates, maybe there should be a TV ad. I'm Mitt Romney, and I'm not a lawyer, and I approve of this message. I mean, that alone, I think, could get him about 10,000 new votes per state. How many people have been burned by lawyers in their life? They don't know that Obama's a lawyer and that Romney's not a lawyer. Romney's a businessman. For better or for worse, he knows what a business is. Obama has never created a service or a product that anybody ever wanted. Ever. So I believe that on that basis alone, you should say, I'm not a lawyer and I approve of this message. This is the Savage Nation. If you care to reach the show, it's 1-855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. I will be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. You know, one of the things on my bucket list is learning how to play the sax. Like this is saxophone. Who plays a saxophone like this? There's about three things left that I want to do in my life. One is to become the number one talk show in the United States of America. I've got time. I'm young yet. I always knew I'd be number one. I knew it's only a matter of time. I have a very ancient view of how long it might take someone to get where they want to go. Number two is learning how to play a saxophone like that. And number three is to become a 10th degree black belt. And I'm not yet at the first degree because I know nothing about martial arts. And then, of course, I'd like to learn how to fly a plane. I can pilot a boat. I can pilot a 40-ton boat. I'm good on boats. I'm not good flying. I tried it. I'm just not good. I don't have the spatial. To me, magicians are people who can fly a jet and land it on an aircraft carrier at night in a storm after flying in a combat mission. How could that not be the greatest thing on earth? How could you do that? What kind of skill set does that require? You have to have the mind of Einstein, the physical dexterity of a ballerina, the guts of a cage fighter. I don't know how they do this. These guys are in another world. I remember once we went aboard. We were invited aboard the USS Stennis, my son and I, about 4 years ago. And we watched night flights off the deck. It was like watching rockets take off. I've never seen anything as exciting in my entire life. And here's these young guys flying these $60 million airplanes. They're my heroes. They always have been. I can't do it. I knew I could. I wanted to do it. I couldn't. I mean, I know what I can do and I know what I can't do. And it brings me back to why I'm frosted on the death of 22 Navy SEALs. I keep hearing Obama boasting about, you know, the great this, I'm a war leader, and, you know, as commander-in-chief, he says, as commander, and he keeps repeating it, and it bothers me. Because one thing I know about heroes is they never boast. Talk show hosts boast. Heroes don't boast. Real heroes don't boast. Real leaders don't tell you how great they are. I'll tell you that right now. There's a certain quiet authority that you get from a real leader that you don't see in this man. So as commander-in-chief, when I got Osama bin Laden, I don't want to hear it anymore. It's starting to wear thin. So why doesn't Romney say, or why didn't he say it's too late, or why doesn't he run ads? Who put those 22 Navy SEALs, Mr. President, on that single Chinook helicopter causing the death of more Navy SEALs than have ever died in the history of their group? Ever. 22 Navy SEALs dead, thrown onto one helicopter, flown into a hot zone, and killed. Cover up. Big story. Big story. Greatest failure, military failure of our time. It's actually bigger than the USS Cole. Because they were all put on that helicopter, and I'll tell you the truth. You got to understand something. This didn't happen by accident. From my point of view, somebody in the Pentagon wanted to demoralize the SEAL team. Somebody in the Pentagon decided to put them on that helicopter and have them killed. I swear to God, this is how I see it. I'm not going to get into it anymore. It's an election cycle. Nobody even knows what I'm talking about, probably, except a few guys who probably know what I'm talking about. And we got a few callers who are going to talk about it. But I've written a novel called A Time for War that will be out in the spring. You can't even buy it. I'm not peddling a book. It opens with that helicopter crash, fictionalized. That's right. That's how much it affected me last year. I put it into a novel. And I envision one day it'll be in the movies. Somebody did this to them. That's how I see it. Let's go to Dallas, Texas. KLIF, Cal is a heli pilot. And he says he knows something about the facts. Cal, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, thank you for taking my call, sir. A couple things you caught my interest when you mentioned CH-47s, and I flew those aircraft from 1987 until 2007. And you were talking about most of them were Vietnam era, and that is correct. However, back in the late 80s, early 90s, all those aircraft were sent back to Boeing and remanufactured to the D model standard. As a matter of fact, the Army's in the process of sending them back to Boeing yet again to be upgraded further to what's called the F model.
I agree with you, and I'm aware it's the fourth or fifth iteration of the original Vietnam era helicopter, but that's really not the point. The point is that I believe, as a non-military man, but with a mind that can analyze things, those men were put on a single helicopter, even if it was by accident, whoever decided that it was a mistake. Why were they not sent in three fast attack helicopters rather than one slow-flying Chinook?
First and foremost, the CH-47 actually is one of the fastest of all the Army helicopters. Its top speed is 170 knots. Now, why do they use them so much in Afghanistan?
Right.
It's because you have two 5,000 shaft horsepower engines, which allows that aircraft to operate at altitudes that UH-60s can't. Not only that, it can carry so much more. The pilot of that aircraft that got shot down was Chief Warrant Officer David Carter of the Colorado National Guard. Okay, I happen to have known the man. Why they were all put in there, there was probably more than one aircraft. They never go out unless it's in pairs. We did missions in Iraq where we'd take and put 45 infantry guys in the back of that aircraft and go land in somebody's backyard at 3 a.m. You know, four aircraft. You can put 180 people.
Okay, you're the expert. I'm not. So please answer this question. Is it typical to load up 22 Navy SEALs in one helicopter?
Yes, and it's not the first time. If you recall back early in the war, they were...
Well, maybe the strategy is flawed. I mean, if I were involved in planning this as a civilian, I would ask this question. Why are you putting all of these assets in one, all your eggs in one basket? Why don't you disperse some of these men in three helicopters or four?
Well, there's probably, you know, I can tell you they operate minimum in pairs, but the fact of the matter is that... they're put on those aircraft because they can operate at such high altitude. That aircraft was
But it didn't help them. Allegedly, they were shot down with an RPG, which unto itself is quite worrisome. One rocket-propelled grenade can bring down a helicopter with all those men on it?
Yeah, it's not the first time it happened. Early in the war, they were doing an extraction of some special forces operators and actually... There was, I think, three or four CH-47s and some attack assets, and one of the aircraft was actually hit with an RPG and knocked a guy.
Well, let me ask you this, Cal. What helicopters were used in the attack on Osama bin Laden's headquarters? It wasn't a Chinook, was it? Didn't they use three fast helicopters, one of which crashed?
They did not go into the compound itself because the Blackhawks did, because the CH-47 is so big it takes up a large footprint.
They didn't use a CH-47. They used three attack helicopters, landed nearby, and one of them crashed. Am I mistaken in that, or is that accurate?
They had the UH-60 crash, but they had two CH-47s as backup. They landed one outside the compound, put people in it. They had another one, which is called a fat cow, which basically has internal tanks.
All right, so from your point of view as a helicopter pilot, you're not as concerned as I am, or you don't consider this to be a military misjudgment, putting all those men on that helicopter. You think it was, let's say, protocol, and it just happened. Is that how you look at it?
Yes, sir, that's how I look at it.
I'm going to accept your viewpoint. From your point of view, I accept it as an expert. I still don't think it was the right answer. I still think a mistake was made. And I will bet you that I have a caller who will agree with me who is a military man. I'm almost out of time again. I'm going to be right back to take a caller who says the SEAL team was set up and they were killed on purpose by somebody in the Defense Department. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
12 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock, we're going to rock. Around 10 o'clock tonight, put your bad bags on. Join me home.
Welcome back to the new Savage Nation, 1-855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282 from anywhere in America. I'll go back to that story about the 22 dead Navy SEALs. I mean, it's a kind of almost a footnote to military history. The last caller, who's a helicopter pilot by his own statement, says it's normal to fly people into a mission like that. I, as an outsider, can't believe it. I still think SEAL Team 6 was set up. But since we're in an election cycle, I want to go back to the bigger picture of Obama-Romney for a minute. And let me tell you what I fear so that you understand where I'm coming from. I know what the travesty of communism, I know the tragedy and travesty of communism. I know that in the last century, this misguided notion of fairness and anti-capitalism yielded 100 million dead. And I am telling you that every time Obama spoke before the election cycle, I heard the same rhetoric that I have read about and I have listened to for 30 or 40 years. You know, few people imagined the tragedy that would unfold in China when Mao Zedong launched the Cultural Revolution in May of 1966. All he said was, let's denounce capitalist representatives in the academic, education, news, arts, and publishing circles. That's all Mao Zedong said. Just let's denounce capitalism in these circles. Few people imagined what would follow. They had no idea. They thought that it was a similar movement to the anti-rightist campaign. That's all. And so the party leaders of that time in China sent work teams into newspapers, schools, universities, and other cultural departments with orders to identify and purge a handful of capitalist representatives in the leadership of each institution. But by the end of July of that year, 1966, Mao Zedong, the butcher of China, made clear that he had more in mind than a routine witch hunt. And it emerged, and it got worse, and people were killed and dragged out. And the fact is, you don't have any idea where Obama's sentiments really lie, because he's very skilled as a sophist in hiding what he actually believes. But if you've listened to him over the last 3.5 years, it's pretty clear that he's way outside the ken of even Democrat circles. He is outside the ken of even leftist circles. He is what you would call today a progressive, which is a code word for communist. Progressives boast that they're for the new and for the advanced and for fairness. It's the same tired rhetoric we heard from Mao Zedong when he launched the Cultural Revolution in 1966. And remember, when you hear people calling for an end to capitalism, and it's taken as like, oh, that sounds reasonable, and then you see MSNBC, these frauds. Frauds, they're working for General Electric, who pays no taxes, and they're sitting there saying they're anti-capitalist, they make $1 million or more a year, and they're making believe that they're one of the homeless in the streets. How do they get away with it? With that snotty face, every one of them has another snide little face on. And so be very careful about the witch hunt that could be unleashed in this country if Obama wins again. You don't have any idea where this could lead. You haven't any idea where this anti-capitalist mentality could lead. All you hear is fairness and pay their fair share. Code words, again, for the Cultural Revolution. We've seen where it went. It could become a metastasis. Just as radical Islam has subverted the entire religion of Islam, radical Democrat politics of the type that Obama has espoused for 3.5 years prior to the election could yield unintended consequences that could be catastrophic for you, the listener of this program. Understand that. Rick on KSFO in Ripon, California, welcome to the Savage Nation. Going back to the caller who you say, this is an interesting call about the helicopter. I sense something was wrong. What do you believe?
I believe that guy was a plant. I mean, I'm just a truck driver with a high school diploma, but he knew too damn much. He thought he did. And he was there to make your comments look like they've been holding no water. And I didn't
That's
like
right.
that.
I understand that, because every time I asked a commonsensical question such as, is it common to put 22 Navy SEALs on a single helicopter, he kind of parsed the answer the way Obama would and say, yes, it's done all the time. Sometimes we had 40 on it. I've never seen it done before, because 3 helicopters were sent in on the Osama bin Laden mission, and they were fast attack helicopters, not slow-moving Chinook helicopters. Now, I'm not an expert on this, but I still want an answer to the question, who made that decision to kill those SEALs? Was it by accident or by design? Were they trying to demoralize the SEAL team? Am I wrong in asking the question, Rick?
No, you're not, and I think it was by design. And I understand what you said. This guy he sounded too phony to me. He said he knew too much, and he just sounded phony. And,
I have another caller who is a military man who has a different opinion. And I hope that people disagree with me. And I hope it starts a national dialogue. And I hope that other news outlets pick up on it. And I hope there's a congressional investigation of who put those SEALs on that helicopter. And I hope we find out that it was not by design, but by accident.
Yeah, but
I have an intuition about these things, and I'm generally right. And since I am a student of communism, and I know how the cadres work, and I know how the KGB worked, and I know that in the ex-Soviet Union there were political officers on every submarine. Remember the movie The Hunt for Red October? Do you remember that movie at all? Well, try to think about it. On that submarine with the normal complement of men, there was an officer who was a political officer. Her only job, or his only job, was to make certain that all the members of that crew were politically correct, meaning that they were in line with the Communist Party doctrine. We have the same thing in academia. We have the same thing in academia today. We have it going on in corporate life, where you have so-called diversity trainers, who are nothing more than modern KGB agents, in my opinion, trying to force people to think a certain way against their better judgment. And we have no idea who inside the Defense Department today is operating on the same order as a sort of KGB operative. When I say KGB operative, I mean that in kind, not that they're working for Russia. Let's not take things out of context. Okay, let's go to callers on the Savage Nation. Rochester, New York, WHAM Frank, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
I watched a television program where they interviewed the parents of one of the SEAL team members there, and
yes.
He told his parents in a letter that he felt that he was a marked person and that he didn't feel that he was going to be coming home, and I think that they were set up.
Well, that's my intuition, which is I built a whole novel around it coming out in the spring called A Time for War, and it starts with the crash of that helicopter.
And you know,
I studied I'm telling you, something's fishy about it. That's my feeling as an ordinary American. Something's fishy about it.
Oh, they don't talk about it, but I think they swept it right under the rug.
The reason they swept it on, let's say it was an accident. Let's say it was straight up an accident. Well, why is it not discussed? If Obama takes credit for killing Osama bin Laden as the great war hero, isn't it fair to ask, well, fair enough, Mr. President, you achieved that. But how do you account for the death of so many Navy SEALs in that mission? Shouldn't he at least answer that question?
Yeah, I think so, but I don't know why they didn't bring that up even in the debate.
Well, why didn't Romney bring up 10 different topics in the debate? How about the Keystone XL pipeline? Let's make it very basic for the average listener. Romney had a chance to say, you know, Mr. President, he shouldn't have called him Mr. President. He should have called him Mr. Obama. He should have said, you know, Mr. Obama, you talk a lot about green energy. Why did you block the Keystone XL pipeline, which would have cut the cost of gasoline by at least $1 a gallon? He could have nailed him to the wall with that one. Don't you agree?
Oh, sure. What about giving $2 billion to Brazil so they can drill in the Gulf, and then we have to buy the fuel from them?
Oh, you mean the Brazilian oil company that is part owned by his good friend George Soros?
Oh, sure.
And you know, and by the way, you know why Obama prohibited the building of the Keystone pipeline from Canada? It wasn't just to make certain that we relied more and more upon the fantasy of so-called green energy. It's because his good friend and donor, Warren Buffett, runs the oil down from Canada on his trains. You know that, don't you?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, Warren Buffett, the Mr. Fairness himself. Old Warren Buffett runs the oil tank trains from Canada into the U.S. You think he wants competition? This is like the great robber barons. This is like going back to the age of the Vanderbilts and the Rockefellers. That's how corrupt this is. And this is the Savage Nation. I don't want to blow my voice out on night two. I could feel it. I better get the old Echinacea Golden Seal throat spray during the break. What else is in the news? Hurricane Sandy pounds Jamaica, the names at Cuba. I'm not going to Florida for a month. Let's see. Syrian rebels warily accept foreign fighters' help. Oh, that's a loaded statement. Syrian rebels. You know who they are, don't you? The Syrian rebels are Al-Qaeda. The Syrian rebels are the very same people who have taken over Libya. The Syrian rebels are the very same people who have taken over Egypt. And so if you think I don't see what's coming in Syria, you're mistaken. Again, here's an example. You've got a massively evil dictator, and what you have waiting in the wings to take over in Syria is massively more evil. So which side should we be on? I haven't an answer for you. I know this, that several hundred fighters from Jabhat al-Nusra, Arabic for the Support Front Group, are with the rebels. I know that many of the fighters are coming from Libya, Tunisia, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and the Balkans, and many of them are jihadis. And many of them are enemies of America, enemies of Christians, enemies of Jews. And yet the American people are that naive, they don't even understand this. You have foreign extremists whose avowed goal is to topple Assad and then create another front against Israel and America, and you want me to support the rebels against Assad? Do you have any idea there's going to be a bloodbath in Syria unlike any you've ever seen against Christians and those who believe in the West? Watch out. Just watch out. It's Libya and Egypt all over again in Syria. There are no good guys here. There are only less bad guys. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The Savage Nation. The phone number is 855-400-SAVAGE from anywhere in America. You're welcome to call the program. I mean, we're all over the map. We're talking about everything from the death of 22 Navy SEALs within the year, all on one helicopter, whether it was an accident, whether it was a bad judgment, whether it was done on purpose. But let's get back to the election, because I think that's all anybody really cares about right now. And the fact of the matter is, there's a lot to talk about with regard to the election. If you care to talk about anything with regard to the election, I'll tell you what I think is the newest topic. When I see that The Atlantic, which is, let's say, a liberal publication, I grew up reading it along with The New Yorker and the other magazines, when even The Atlantic is writing an article entitled The Revenge of the Soccer Moms, Why Are Women Leaving Obama? I have to ask myself, why are women leaving Obama? If they're noticing it and they're saying the Democrat machine is in panic mode over women suddenly jumping ship, I asked before and I'll ask again. If you're a woman, have you abandoned Obama and why? Was it something he did or said? Or is it something Romney did or said that made you go to his side? And I'd like to know your answer to that question. So let's go to all these topics that we're talking about on the Savage Nation, Navy SEALs. I've got callers on Trump. You want to talk about old Donald? He's a friend of mine. You better be very nice. I don't think he did himself a favor today, but I don't know where that's going to go. Let's take that caller then, just for the fun of it. Sacramento, KSFO, San Francisco, San Jose, and Oakland. Jason, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, how you doing? I just want to know, do you think Obama will show his papers and applications that Trump called him out on today, or do you think he's going to
it's an interesting question. What if he shows his papers and he's got all A's and it shows he was born in Honolulu and his passport shows that he was born in Honolulu? So maybe you'll say then that Trump is working for Obama at that point. That's another talk show topic. I don't have an answer. Remember what happened the last time he brought up the birther issue and then they showed the certificate? Okay, so many people say, well, it's a forgery and it's fake. Yeah, but most Americans put that issue aside after that, didn't they?
Yeah.
Right? So I don't know what might happen. Maybe that's part of the Obama October surprise. I don't know how men at that level operate. I mean, I write novels, so I'm capable of imagining anything is possible. And I particularly like mystery novels. I like, let's say I like Boardwalk Empire. I mean, everything is a conspiracy and a curveball, isn't it?
Yeah, I just think it's weird that he brought it up at this point in the game, you know?
I understand that. And it wasn't such a big deal. The fact of the matter is, I don't have the mindset to be a politician. People say, oh, you speak well, you've read well, why didn't you run for office? Because I don't have the mind to throw curveballs. I really don't. To me, things are what they seem to be. And you analyze things logically. You use Aristotelian logic, which I was raised on. You use deductive reasoning, and you try to figure things out. I don't like to try to, figure things out from a backwards manner. Usually they're crazy. Sometimes they're correct. I think things today in America are exactly what they appear to be. And if you don't, you're welcome to your opinion. Let's take some callers. There are some big calls out there on other topics. There's someone holding from KLIF in Texas for quite a while. Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation of KLIF. What's on your mind?
Welcome back to Dallas, Dr. Savage, and thank Yeehaw. You for your legitimate non-carborundum attitude towards industry.
I learned that in high school from a smarter kid, illegitimate non-carborundum. I'll never forget it.
Thank you for introducing me to that. But, sir, I just wanted to, as you're a true Renaissance man, a true thinker, And something has bugged me from day one. Prior to the Arab Spring, our State Department purchased 70,000 copies of President Obama's book. And my thoughts are, is what if we had, instead of that, given away the free copies of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution? And there are many organizations who would have given it without a taxpayer dime.
But remember, Mao Tse-Tung had the Little Red Book. And so this administration has something along the lines of the Little Red Book. Do you remember the 60s when the Little Red Book was openly sold in bookstores in America as though it were the Holy Grail? Do you go back that far?
Oh, sir, no. I wasn't even a gleam in my father's eye.
Oh, so I'm sort of the older uncle who remembers that. But the fact of the matter is, this is Obama's Little Red Book. And I guess he believes that the folks in the Arab world would read the biography and become inspired, and they would want to put down their Kalashnikovs and pick up a griddle iron. And they'd want to serve. They couldn't wait to put down the tools of terrorism and start serving camel burgers in the Middle East, I guess. They read his story, and they figured that would be the greatest thing on earth. Why kill people when you can open up a camel stand? I don't know. I really don't understand what the thinking was. But as I say, you know, academicians are capable of rather bizarre thinking and bizarre behaviors. I don't know how academicians think. But this administration is very much a pure academic type of administration. They're not very top-loaded with businessmen. It's very much an academic orientation in almost every one of their departments. And so maybe they thought that the story of Obama was so inspiring that the terrorists would put down the Kalashnikovs. I don't know. I can't think that way. But thanks for raising the issue. Yeah, the U.S. Constitution I don't think would go over very well in Islamic circles, by the way. I don't think somehow that the freedom of speech would sell. Freedom of the press would be a big thing. I mean, it doesn't work in Iran, does it? Since the radical Islamists have taken over Iran, freedoms have denigrated. They have been denigrated, rather. They haven't increased. There was far more freedom under the Shah of Iran than there has been since, incidentally. San Jose, KSFO. Scott, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. Great to have you back.
Hello, infidel.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to mention the critical alert that was mentioned on one of the Fox news that actually talked about how the fact that when alert goes out, when someone's under attack, that it goes to all sorts of agencies from the White House to the CIA to local military. And
I got 15 seconds. You're absolutely right. There was an alert. It went out. We had aircraft overhead. They were called. They were told to stand down. They did nothing. Something is wrong with the entire Benghazi story. You're listening to the one and only Savage Nation in your local market. Call the Savage Nation now at 1-855-400-SAVAGE. 1-855-400-7282.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. The phone number by now is probably known by everyone except myself. It's 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. We're talking, of course, about Romney, Obama, election, da-da-da-da-da. But, you know, I'm stuck on one subject, and I think that I'm going to just touch on it again. Recently, it was an anniversary of the deadliest day for U.S. forces in the nearly 10-year war in Afghanistan, when terrorists shot down a Chinook helicopter, killing 30 Americans, including Navy SEAL commandos from the broader unit that killed Osama bin Laden, and 7 Afghan commandos. The helicopter was on a night raid mission in the Tangi Valley of Wardak province, west of Kabul. They say it was shot down by an RPG. How could 22 of the dead Navy SEALs, how could they be killed in one helicopter? I've been asking this for a year. Why has there been no investigation by Congress? Where's the Senate Armed Services Committee, Dianne Feinstein? I realize you're very interested in shopping carts in airports and business deals in China, but you have a responsibility, Dianne, to investigate things like this. And you have abrogated your responsibility because we, the American people, after this election, are not going to let the pressure off. I want to remind those of you listening to me that I was responsible for aborting the Dubai ports deal. Many of you don't even remember that. I probably single-handedly stopped the Dubai port steal. I don't want to go into it. I'll do it at another time. One man can change the course of some events. And I am telling you that there are other people involved behind the scenes on this issue. They want to know how so many of the military's most elite forces could be killed in one mission. It takes years to train a Navy SEAL and put a unit like this together. How could this have happened? Who in the military made the decision to put them into that single Chinook helicopter? And that brings us to the election. Obama continuously boasts about killing Osama bin Laden. He constantly said, as commander-in-chief, I have learned. It sounds like a little, you know, methinks thou. He's boasting a little too much about it. Real heroes generally don't boast about their exploits, number one. They don't say they're commander-in-chief for effect. It sounds tinny. So if he's such a great commander-in-chief, we give him credit for orchestrating the taking out of Osama bin Laden. We ask ourselves why Clinton didn't do it when he had him in their sights. By the way, CIA operatives have said for years that Osama bin Laden had been targeted when Clinton was president, but he wouldn't take him out because he was afraid of collateral damage. All right, so Osama bin Laden was taken out. Obama gets the credit, and I give him credit for that. I wish that it had been done earlier. I slept better that night. But now we have to ask the same commander-in-chief why he is not concerned about all those dead Navy SEALs. Why didn't he demand an investigation within his own Defense Department and get to the bottom of who put them on the helicopter? I'd like to know why. And I will tell you that one day there will be an investigation on this. Something is wrong with that picture. Okay, let's go to the experts. Norfolk, Virginia, WNIS. It's a big Navy town. Mark, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Mr. Savage, it's an honor.
Go ahead.
Hi. I served for 20 years in the Navy on that flight deck, and I never heard of such a thing. So as soon as I heard that, I knew it was a setup.
What do you mean? You never heard of all those SEALs being put on a single Chinook?
No, sir. They're way too loud.
They're too loud to send them in on a mission like that. They almost announced their arrival.
Exactly.
All right, so there's too many questions here, Mark. There are too many questions. And Dianne Feinstein, who was the last I checked chairman of the U.S. Armed Services Committee, so far as I know, has never investigated this. Virginia Beach, Virginia, NIS. John, another Navy caller. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Good.
I used to be in the Army, and whenever we did platoon operations, we were broken up into smaller groups of like eight on the Blackhawks. I don't think the SEALs should have been like that. I do think it was a setup. I've never heard of it being done that way. The other thing is, you keep saying the Chinook is a slow helicopter. I do know for a fact it's actually the fastest helicopter in the Army's inventory. It's something to do with physics. One rotor versus a two rotor.
All right, so I'm wrong about its speed, but am I wrong about the fact that it's odd that so many members of the SEAL team were put on that on a single helicopter?
You're 100% correct on that. That it's extremely odd to be putting so many high dollar assets on one vehicle.
Okay, so I'm wrong about one aspect of this question and right about something else, but I think that we, the American people, we civilians in particular, care about our fighting men. And we care about their deaths. I've sent money whenever, by the way, Marines are unfairly accused and court-martialed. I've been doing it since Bush has been crucifying them. I still want to know why all these Americans were put on that single helicopter. It doesn't make sense to me as a civilian. You should have put them on three different helicopters, right?
Correct. That would have been more standard operating procedure.
Okay, now remember when this happened. Didn't this happen shortly after Osama bin Laden was killed? And isn't it true that SEAL Team 6 was involved in taking down Osama bin Laden? And isn't it also true that after that, these SEAL Team 6 members were sacrificed, in essence, in some way sacrificed either inadvertently or on purpose?
I believe that could be a viable theory.
Yes, that's leave it at that, viable theory. And I'll leave it at that. I'm not going to beat it to death. It's an election cycle. This is maybe a little too technical and esoteric for the average listener who's more interested in the cost of gasoline, you know. But look, the Savage Nation goes where others dare not tread. And that's because I am a free thinker. I hope you are as well. I'll be right back. Welcome to the Savage Nation. The real question for you today, as I can see it, is should America still care about Israel and why? I know it may be a shock to some of you to even ask the question, but there's an awful lot of talk about Iran, Israel, and America. But why are we focused so heavily on Israel? Well, I think it's because Obama has clearly turned his back on Israel. The issue really is, should we still care about Israel as much as America once did? It's a little long in the relationship for us to embrace Israel wholeheartedly without any questions. That's number one. Number two, it seems to me the Israeli economy is doing better than ours is. Maybe they should bail us out. Maybe we should get aid from Israel rather than the other way around. Or, I mean, to put it another way, I would think that there are more Mexicans here than there are Jewish people in the United States of America. You could say that the United States should be more concerned about Mexico than about Israel, if you actually think about it. This is not to say I think we should abandon Israel. I didn't say that at all. Don't misinterpret me. But what is this obsession with Israel? Now, I know that we have cultural ties, emotional ties. We know that. But we have cultural and emotional ties with many countries. We have cultural and emotional ties certainly with Italy. We have cultural and emotional ties with Mexico, with Germany, with Britain. Well, they're not facing an existential annihilation as Israel is, and so that's definitely an argument for worrying about Israel. But really, how much can we worry about our dear friend Israel when we ourselves are a basket case? I have a chart here that I saved. Hold on a minute. I saved this from February 23rd, 2012, which says that America's per capita government debt is worse than Greece. Did you know that? The per capita government debt in America is worse than that of Spain, Portugal, France, Greece, Italy, and Ireland. We're at $44,215 each or more than that. So how can we bail anybody out? How can we carry Israel on our back? We are historically at a point right now where Cuba was with regard to the ex-Soviet Union. And you know what happened, don't you, when the Soviet Union imploded and went bankrupt? First of all, it broke up into many pieces. I don't think that can happen here, but God knows it could happen. Anything can happen. But they have a history of, the Soviet Union was an amalgamation of different nations. America is not an amalgamation of different nations. We are a union of states, not an amalgamation of different nations with different histories in the sense of cultures going back thousands of years and languages that differ. We're really one nation under God, indivisible, etc. Nevertheless, the Soviet Union did abandon Cuba when it broke up and could no longer support it. It's possible the United States could abandon Israel and Egypt and say we can't carry them on our back anymore. But I'd like to know right now from the listeners of the Savage Nation, I think it's a very important question. Certainly we know that this nation was founded upon Judeo-Christian writings and the ethos of the Jewish people and the Christian people as they have unified and come together. Don't fool yourself. Despite what Obama said, this is not a nation built upon Islam and Sharia law. Yeah, I know you're shocked to hear it, but Obama once said in one of his speeches that Muslims built America. We have the speech. We were shocked by it. Remember when he went through his glorification of Muslims? He had the nerve to say that you got the picture. It's not to say that Muslim Americans haven't contributed to this nation, as all other peoples have. But the foundation of America was built upon Judeo-Christian values, as you well know. And the founding fathers were deeply religious. I don't think that when they wrote the Constitution, they envisioned we'd have so many anti-Americans in the Democrat Party, running around trying to stick a knife in our back, as we now have. But I'm asking you again, on a more fundamental, less theoretical question. It's a real question. Romney says that Jerusalem is Israel's capital. Romney's making points with Israelis, but they don't vote in America. Why should America still care about Israel? I could argue we should care more about Mexico than about Israel. Or we could argue that we should care more about El Salvador than about Israel, because I believe there are probably several million El Salvadorans here in the United States of America. It's an interesting question. And, I mean, there's only a few answers to that question. And one of them is that Israel faces an existential annihilation by Iran, who has said clearly over and over again they're going to wipe out all the Jews and wipe Israel off the map. That's what Ahmadinejad said. If we had a real UN that was worth anything, and I'm a real believer that we should eliminate the UN, we should leave it and throw them out of New York. I felt that a long time. They're nothing but a pack of you-know-whats. They hate this country. They stand for everything wrong in the world. If there was a legitimate United Nations, Ahmadinejad would have been arrested for crimes against humanity. But no, there's no UN, there's no, of no value whatsoever. Now, at the same time we're talking about this, and I'm going to take your calls here at 1-800-449-8255, why should America care about Israel? I'd like your answer. My position, I don't even if you know my position, nor do I think my position is that important, because I'm only one of hundreds of millions of Americans. I have a radio show, but it's only one vote, one man, one vote. So I have an opinion, and it may not be the one you think it is, but I'm asking you, why are we so obsessed with Israel? What is this all about? I think it's worth discussion. I mean, Romney is there. Obama's abandoned Israel. Many of you think that's a good thing because you're communists, leftists, socialists, anarchists, and so therefore that's a good thing to most of you extreme leftists. You don't like Israel. Romney, of course, is trying to garner not only the Jewish vote, which is not that big, by the way, but the evangelical vote, which is very large, and it seems to me that the only friends in the world that Israel really has are the American evangelicals. And what's the paradox here, or the irony, if you want to put it the other way, is that this is an amazing thing. The evangelical Christians are a better friend of Israel than are secular liberal Jews in the United States of America. Secular liberal Jews have almost no affinity for Israel. In my experience and estimation, secular liberal Jews who have no spine to begin with and no sense of America, no sense of borders, language, or culture, certainly could care less about Israel or its survival. So the only friends that Israel really has in this country amongst any large voting bloc are amongst the evangelical Christians. And therefore, Romney is trying to tell them he's a friend of Israel to make them understand that although he is a social liberal, which he is, Romney's a social liberal. Why fool yourself? He is worthy of their attention and is worthy of their vote because he likes Israel and he's on their side and he'll protect them, certainly more so than will the wonderful fellow that we now have in the White House. Do you agree with Romney that Jerusalem is Israel's capital? So we're going to talk a little bit about Israel in the first half hour at least. So obviously Obama has turned his back on Israel. There's no question the Democrats know that. It's not the reason he's down in the polls. There's many other reasons. The main thing on the prediction model of why Obama's likely to lose as of right now is economic. Most Americans could care less about Israel. But the jobless rate has been stuck at just above 8% for months. And I understand you have to go back to 1936 to find a president reelected with a higher unemployment rate than Obama has. And so many liberal pollsters who are honest are saying that they don't think Obama can win based on these prediction models. And, of course, I'm not sure of that because we know that this – I was almost said gang, but pardon me. I watched The Godfather last night again, so you'll have to forgive me for slipping. I mean this administration, pardon me. I didn't mean gang or regime. This administration from Chicago is capable of virtually anything, including starting a war – Or let us say, signing up 3 million illegal aliens. God only knows what they're liable to do. Nevertheless, let's say that Obama's in trouble. But that's not the question. The question is, Romney's in Israel, and he says Jerusalem's the capital. And I'm asking you, the listener, should we still care about Israel and why? And I'd like to know the answer. So I'll start with Elliot. A lot of calls. Elliot, go ahead, please.
Yes, Savage, it's very simple. America needs Israel more than Israel needs America. Why? Because God judges the nations according to the way they treat the Jewish people entrusted to their care.
Wait a minute. We are our brother's keeper? You mean we have a lifetime liability to take care of Israel?
No, that's not what I said. I said that God judges the nations on how they treat the Jews entrusted to their care.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait, let's slow down. What about all the Russian gangsters that have moved into Israel? We should take care of them, too?
Again, listen, I'm just giving you a broad overview.
No, I'm giving you a nut. I'm giving you a nun broad overview. I'm asking a question. What are they all sterling characters in Israel? Everyone in Israel is a sacred holy man.
I'm telling you that throughout.
Israel's a corrupt Mediterranean nation. Okay, let's be clear. Ask an Israeli and see if I'm lying. Israel is a corrupt Mediterranean nation, albeit it's the best friend we have in the Middle East, but we really need them, or do they need us?
Savage, take a look at history. The Spanish Empire, they screwed the Jews, they lost their empire. The British turned on the Jews, they lost their empire.
So you really think that it's God's will? That's a pretty powerful statement, Elliot. I'm not saying that I disagree historically in what you said, but I don't know if you can tie the abandonment of Israel to the fall of the nation. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. It's an interesting question. I mean, look, I got to do this. Here's what I got to do. It's my job. You're listening to the Savage Nation, right? I got to think, what are you going to be interested in talking about? I mean, I could have talked about a lot of other things. I could have brought up any topic under the sun. But I figured it's a valid topic, which is, do Americans still care about Israel? I'm not so sure the young ones do, for example. I don't think the young ones care about anything except what app they're going to get. That's it. Everything in their mind is an app. They're like brain-dead zombies. They're brain-dead, drug-addicted, sex-addicted zombies, the young ones, which is why they're the natural constituency of Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama. And they know it, too. Believe me, they know it. You think they care about Israel? They have no ties to Israel, no feelings for it. And so it's a different world that's emerged. You know, you could say one thing, but the world is bigger than what we think. I'm older than most people listening to the show. So I have one set of opinions. Hopefully that the opinions that I have, or the viewpoints I have, to put it that way, still resonate with a good portion of America. I assume that my viewpoints are not that bizarre. But the young people don't have the same viewpoints I do. They're fundamentally sort of from the Brave New World model. The young people in this country are in, by and large, I'm trying to pick the correct word. I would say a social, no, that's not the word. Well, you could say that because they grew up with apps, with phones and devices. They have a lot of trouble talking to people. And you could say they're somewhat asocial. I would say they're apolitical more than anything else. They don't even care about politics. They're brainwashed. They believe global warming is a religious truth. They don't even, you know, it's an interesting thing on global warming. It'll take me a minute to explain something. A new guy comes up from Berkeley, another professor who was a so-called skeptic, pops up and says, "I'm no longer a skeptic. Now I'm sure that global warming is caused by man." And so, what did he just prove? As a trained scientist, what he proved is that it's debatable. In other words, if the biggest skeptics now suddenly became a believer, it proves that the whole field is in flux. That's how science works. But go explain that to idiots who don't even understand the basic premise of science, which is that of experimentation and proof. So in other words, if the leading skeptic suddenly becomes a believer in global warming, all he did was prove that it's debatable. That's all. It's the end of the discussion. I can wipe the floor with them tomorrow. Don't tell me every scientist believes that it's caused by mankind, because it's not true. I can show you those doing studies of ice cores in the Antarctic and the Arctic, which will prove that global warming is not a new phenomenon. So this schmuck from Berkeley probably was told in plain English, "Look, idiot, your grant's not being renewed. We're not funding any more skepticism. Under the Obama regime, you're not getting another dime. So I'll tell you what, if you convert now to the believing school, oh boy, wait till you see what we throw at you." But all he's proven in a nutshell is that it's a debatable discussion, debatable issue. See it? But do you understand what I just said? Yes, you may if you know how to reason. But I would say most young people don't even follow the line of reasoning I just presented to you. They can't even understand what I just said. I don't think they even understand the scientific method. So now let's bring it back to Israel and you. Do you still support Israel? Is America worth it? Is it worth, should we carry Israel on our back? And why? Because we do carry Israel on our back. We're still giving $4-5 billion a year to Israel and the same amount to the Islamists in Egypt. Can you figure this out? How long do you think it's going to be before the Islamists really show their fangs? How long do you think it's going to be till when Hillary Clinton says, I'm shocked they told us that they were going to be moderate. I'm shocked that they burnt down another 30 churches and drove out another 30,000 Christians. I'm stunned because our doxy, as put forward by the group that I represent, says Hillary Clinton, our doxy is that the Islamists are good people. It's unbelievable to me. So anyway, let's go back to Israel. What do we need them for in plain English? Ryan, your opinion counts. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, unlike the last caller, absolutely, Israel needs us a lot more than we need them. However, unlike Mexico and El Salvador, we depend on them a lot for our security and our intelligence, and therefore I do feel it is imperative to continue supporting Israel.
Okay, Although, hold on, wait. I want to follow you. I want to listen carefully, which I've done. How do we depend upon Israel for our security when in the first Gulf War they were told to stand down and not fire a shot, and they were hiding underneath our shields?
I understand that, but...
In the first Gulf War, their boys didn't come home in body bags. Ours did.
No, you are...
How do you explain we need them? We need them for what?
However, a lot has changed in the world since then, and the whole wave now, what's going on in the Middle East, especially the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood and all the intelligence that Israel does provide us, I feel would help us in the long run.
I'm not so sure. I think with Hillary Clinton and George Soros and Jimmy Carter and Zbigniew Brzezinski and Obama and that pack of anti-Semites that I just named, by the way, and I know one of them at least is Jewish, but that doesn't mean they're not anti-Israel and anti-Semitic. You know, it's not an oxymoron to say that. But I don't want to go into the subtleties of what I just said. With that pack of anti-Semites ruling the world right now, okay, it's not really inconceivable that Israel could face an existential threat of being annihilated by a nuclear weapon. That's all because they overthrew our greatest ally in Egypt, a man who had been at peace with Israel for 40-some-odd years, and they killed him. They killed Mubarak. They threw him overboard, and they let the outlawed band Muslim Brotherhood come to power, and they're going to do the same thing in Syria. You're telling me Israel's not facing a greater threat now than it did 30 years ago? I would say it is.
Absolutely.
So they need us more than we need them, right?
Oh, that's for sure. But I do say that they will contribute, unlike Mexico and El Salvador.
To what? Well, hold on now. So our national interests in the Middle East, let's put aside spiritual, religious. What are our national interests in the Middle East? There's only one answer. Oil, correct?
Correct. I mean, obviously, everything comes down to money.
Now, wait, hold on now. This is an interesting thing to follow. Oil, oil, oil. Oil, oil, oil. But Obama blocks the Keystone XL pipeline, which would have brought oil from Canada to America. Why would Obama block a flow of oil and increase our dependency upon the Arabs? Why would he do that?
Well, absolutely. I mean,
to me, this is basic. This is 101. Obama is the greatest national security threat that I've seen in my lifetime. Canada wants to pump, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of barrels of oil to us on a safe, secure pipeline, no ships required, would lower the price of oil, reduces our dependency upon the Arabs, and Obama blocks it, so Canada's going to send it instead to Vancouver and transship it to China. Now, why would Obama do it? There's only three reasons. One, he's in bed with the Islamists. Two, he's in bed with the fake solar gangsters who are making trillions of dollars on false solar contracts and want to make certain that we have a greater dependency upon solar than upon oil, which is one of the greatest scams of our lifetime. And three, there's a wild card that I can't figure out yet. But nevertheless, did you see that today? As a side note, the deadliest global city, Chicago. Did you know that? Did you? It's shocking to believe this. Under Obama and Rahm Emanuel, two Democrats, incidentally, Chicago has one of the highest murder rates in the world. Chicago has the highest murder rate, higher even than Mexico City and Sao Paulo. So you look at the projected murder the incidence of murders per 100,000 people. Singapore is the lowest of major cities, 0.4 murders per 100,000. Tokyo, very low, 0.5 murders per 100,000. Berlin, one person murdered per 100,000. Sydney, 1 per 100,000. London, 1.4. Toronto, 1.7. Amsterdam, 1.8. Paris, 4.4 murders per 100,000. New York, 6.0. LA, 7.5. Mexico City, 8. Moscow 9-6, Sao Paulo 15-6, and Chicago 19-4 murders per 100,000. The highest rate amongst these cities that are listed. Can you believe this? The deadliest global city is Chicago. Global city. Cities that consider themselves, you know, power players, alpha cities as they call them. It has the highest murder rate. That's under Rahm Emanuel. That's in Obama's backyard. What does that tell you about their inability to manage this world, let alone Chicago? Scott, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. How are you? I love your show. Thank you so much for saying what we all wish we had a soapbox to say.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say, can you speak a little bit to like the formation of the Federal Reserve back in the day? And
Hold on. This is a setup call. You know we're talking about Israel, not about the Federal Reserve. So if you don't want to talk about Israel, I understand it. But I'm not going to go into the Federal Reserve right now because it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, and it's going to distract my big audience.
Well, I was just going to, my point was, isn't there a point at which countries become invested in our economy? Let's say, you know, Saudi Arabia is up to 10% invested in our stock market, in our economy, that we start to have ties to countries that are outside of political issues that
I don't know what you're trying to say, that Israel's heavily invested in the U.S., is that it?
Yes.
Okay, is it more so invested than China?
Well, and it depends on if you're looking at it, you know, from a country or from within the Jewish people. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I really don't know what you're saying. Now you're starting to like border on the Nancy Pelosi-esque.
No. American Jews that have, have ties to Israel, do you count them all in the same pot? You know what I'm just saying, like...
I don't know what you're saying. You're not making sense, Scott. So I'm going to say thank you for listening. Don't go away mad. Just go away. Like in my father's little story, I had a little sign. It had a little sign in the front of the stand in his little store. It said, don't go away, mad. Just go away. That's all. I've given you time. You try to form a thought, and no one heard a word. I think you were dragging me into Federal Reserve, Jewish conspiracy. I saw where it was going. Next, it was the secret handshake was going to come up. I get it. And every Jew has a secret handshake. I saw where you were going. Okay. If there is one, I don't know what it might be. I know that the Masons have a secret handshake. They tickle each other's palm, right? Texas John, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. Yes, I want to segue off your very first caller. Yeah, from an evangelical Christian viewpoint and a Bible literalist, we believe that when God made the promise to Abraham, you know, he said that he who blesses Israel will be blessed and he who curses Israel will be cursed. We take that very literally.
You know, here's the part. Hey, thank you. I know that to be true. You're the greatest support for Israel in the world. And yet the secular Jew hates Israel in many ways. They have no feel. Let's put it this way. Most of them have no attachment to Israel, number one, but they hate evangelicals. Did you know that?
Yes.
No, I mean, I'm gonna blow the lid off this seething nightmare, which is that ultra liberal Jews. I'm gonna pick an example of the type I'm talking about, so you have an image. An image would be that of, let us say, that comedian, a Woody Allen type, for example, ultra liberal, so-called progressive world citizen. That type of man detests and fears, in my opinion, detests and fears evangelical Christians. And I've heard them say to me, you know why the evangelical loves Jews in Israel? Why? Because they believe that after the coming of Jesus, the second coming of Jesus, all the Jews will convert to Christianity. So we shouldn't trust evangelicals. They have such circuitous reasoning that at the end of the day is nothing but racism.
Well, actually, that's a true statement.
No, I know it's a true statement, but in the interim, Israel's here and needs all the support it can get. It doesn't mean you're forcibly going to convert all the Jews to Christianity?
No, and we believe that the Messiah will take care of that.
So, all right, you ought to tell that to Larry David, because I think Larry David thinks you're actually going to force Jews to be baptized. But you see, this is an interesting question. A lot of things are based upon spirituality and religion. Now, Mitt Romney is a very religious Christian, incidentally. I know they try to smear him on the Mormon thing. It didn't work. It backfired on Obama, the Obama machine. Then they try to smear Romney on the outsourcing. I saw the ads. They're pathetic. His ears are theirs, and he sings the God Bless Him. What a terrible ad that is. Is that supposed to be a mocking of Romney? Actually, it's sickening, the Obama ad. It's sickening in its amateurishness. I think it's a good topic. We'll do it for a few more minutes, and then we'll move on to other topics. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So now I'm going to open it up to another line of questioning on the Savage Nation. You have now entered the Savage Court, so here's the other side. You're a secular, non-religious Jewish person. You consider yourself culturally Jewish, but you have no religious feelings. You don't relate to Judaism as a religion. You believe the evangelical is evil, even though they are the greatest supporter of Israel. Why? Why do you have such contempt for the evangelical? Isn't it racist of you to have such suspicion of Christians who support Israel? I would think it's very, very racist of you. But I don't think I'm going to get a Larry David-like caller on this show. I don't believe they listen to the show, number one. And number two, I don't think they call. So, the prediction models look dismal for Obama. Can he still win? This was written by a liberal, Jeff Greenfield, by the way, a real leftist. And even he is saying that every model shows that Obama has to overcome a great set of numbers that no incumbent president or incumbent party has ever managed to surmount. And the reason I'm focusing on that one is because I said that if the election were held today, Romney would win by 20 points. My sense is Romney would win by 20 points today. Obama is so disliked. He is so distrusted that he would lose by 20 points. You know, in the big picture here, to me, we have to revise. We've got to stop the fundraising. We've got to limit the amount of time anyone can run for office. We've got to limit the amount of money going into campaigns. Can you believe a man would subject himself to such a grueling, it's like hurdles, I don't have the right word, to run for office like Romney and Obama are doing? Do you realize what could be done with that money? You have any idea what could be done for starving people, blind people, children with leukemia? These hundreds and hundreds of millions, billions of dollars being spent on wasted ads. And it brings us back to the primary point, which is, does America still care about Israel? Should America care about Israel? Why should America care about Israel? Because I argued that there are more people of Mexican descent in America than there are of Jewish descent. First of all, Mexico is not facing an existential annihilation by a neighbor that threatens to wipe it off the planet. Ahmadinejad is threatening to do that to the Jews, and yet the UN does nothing. Obama has basically turned his back on Israel. If Obama is not overtly anti-Israel, he's certainly not in favor of the nation of Israel. We all know that. We know about him kissing the ring of the Saudi king, the whole story. So Romney says, look, I'm running for office. When I win, things are going to be different. It's going to be America again. We're going to have America again, the way it's supposed to be. Not some weirdo college lunatic that's trying out every cockamamie idea that the leftists in the universities have ever spawned. Okay, that's what he's saying. I hope you forgive me. My time is a little off. Normally I'm a West Coast guy, and I don't know. I'm not sleeping well. I'm not eating well. So I'm eating a radio meal during the show. It is appropriately in a styrofoam container with an aluminum cap from a local chicken joint. But it's got almost no chicken in it, which is, I know it's healthy. And they're ripping me off. I had it brought in. I know it's very, very healthy because there's no chicken in it. It's, they tell you, they give you, but the longer the story on the list of how good it is for you, the less chicken. There's little shards of chicken, beans, or cut up mango, God knows what. I'm so hungry, even I'm eating it, and it's not, but, yeah, the less story, the more the meat. It's like a quotient. The less of a write-up on the wall about sustainable this, the more you read about green and sustainable, the less food you're getting. And the more you're getting, you know what. Did I tell you why I didn't move to Israel in 1979? Raise your hand in the audience if you want to hear the story. I told it maybe once. Oh, I don't want to tell it. I didn't want to tease you. Another day, I'm not in the mood. So we're still talking about Israel now. What else is he going to talk about? Bad chicken, good chicken, bad tie, good tie. Can Obama win? Hello, anybody out there? Do you think Obama really appeals to blue-collar Democrats? I don't. I don't know why any blue-collar Democrat would ever vote for, a blue-collar worker would vote for Obama, unless he's a cop or a fireman. Then I could see why 90% of cops and firemen, although they may have a flag on their motorcycle, they're going to vote Democrat for the pension. Period. End of story. Don't look for to a cop to have a discussion about politics. Their unions go Democrat for the pensions. That's all. You expect the fireman to vote for Romney?